What is up, everybody? Welcome to episode 33 of the Radio Live Transmission Podcast. My name is Ryan. I am your host. On this podcast, I bring you music reviews from a music lover. I'd like to start off today's episode with another quote about music. This one is from Percy Shelley, who was an English romantic poet and maybe possibly more famous for being the husband of Mary Shelley. Infamous for writing the novel Frankenstein. The quote is, "Music, when soft voices die, vibrates in the memory," end of quote. So do with that what you will. Have a lot to talk about on this episode today. I think I sort of overextended myself a little bit. There was a lot of releases that I wanted to review, and I think I maybe bit off a little bit more than I could chew, but that's okay. I get it done. It just took a little longer than I expected. So, but today I'm going to be reviewing new releases from Jonathan Davis, Graveyard, Churches, Father John Misty, and also Ghost. And I will also be doing some shorter reviews for new releases from Kanye West, Jenny Haval, and Black Thought and Ninth Wonder. Alright, so why don't we go ahead and get into the reviews of the EPs. So the first EP, or I mean, I guess you could call this an album. That's how it's being referred to in most publications and just online. I guess it's just a matter of who you talk to. The first release that I'd like to talk about today is the new record Ye from Kanye West. I can feel the spirits all around me. I think bricks and bikers trying to warn me. They know I got demons all on me. Devil been trying to make an army. They been strategizing the army. They don't know they dealing with a zombie. Niggas been trying to test my Gandhi. Just because I'm dressed like Abercrombie. You see, that's what I'm talking about. That's why I fuck with Ye. See, that's my third part. That's my bipolar shit, nigga. What? Right, and that was a sample of the track Yikes. So, Kanye West showed up on my radar way back in 2001 as the mastermind behind an absolutely great track called Izzo, I-Z-Z-O, from Jay-Z's just-released album, The Blueprint. And from that point forward, it seemed like you just couldn't get away from Kanye. And I was impressed as hell by his production work. I really was. Even when he dropped his first album, 2004 was The College Dropout, I jumped right on the hype train, which for me, that hype train was driven by the song Through the Wire, which I may have listened to over 1,000 times. It's entirely possible. I absolutely love that song. Unfortunately, over time, it became pretty clear that Kanye West was going to test the limits of one of the most, you know, interesting puzzles in the world of music or of art in general, really. That is the puzzle of trying to separate music from the artists themselves. I've listened to plenty of musicians who, in all likelihood, I would just want to throttle, you know, if forced to spend a significant amount of time around them. Two good examples would be Morrissey, obviously of the Smiths and solo fame, and also Glenn Danzig. and, you know, Kanye has definitely
earned a spot at the top of this list. I mean, there's always a question of whether or not an artist is being genuine. You know, this distinction comes into play for me here because, you know, I believe that Morrissey is probably insufferable and that, you know, Danzig is most likely an inflated prick. But for the life of me, I can't figure out whether Kanye is trying to live his life as one long publicity stunt or not. I guess it doesn't really matter much when, you know, the end result is the same. And, you know, Kanye is part of the American pop culture landscape, whether you like him or not. So in the interest of fairness, I decided to give this new EP album, whatever you want to call it, a chance. Recorded at West's Ranch in Jackson Hole, Wyoming. The album's cover is actually a photo of the mountains that surround, you know, this very secluded spot. Ye is one of 5 7-track albums that West produced at this location, the first being Pusha T's Daytona album, which is another really good record. The most recent being Kanye's collaboration with Kid Cudi, which is called Kids See Ghosts. And the last two being releases from Nas and also an artist by the name of Teyana Taylor. So, you know, Kanye is to be commended for being so, I'd say, lyrically candid on this new release, on Ye. You know, really pulling away any sort of veneer that may have been draped over his, you know, his lyrics in the past. It seems appropriate that this new record comes fairly recently after Jay-Z's album 444, you know, which also dealt very much with personal strife as well as domestic struggle. Here I am trying to navigate the layers of my feelings concerning Kanye's art. Impressed by his honesty and his pull-no-punches approach on tracks like the opener, which is called I Thought About Killing You, you know, confronting the bipolar disorder that he tells a seemingly half-hearted joke about on the album's cover. You know, the cover contains the two lines. One is, I hate being bipolar. The other line is, it's awesome. And he also, you know, he reveals on the track Yikes, which you heard a sample of, that, you know, he looks at this bipolar condition as a quote-unquote superpower more than he looks at it as a, you know, a hindrance or a disability. Elsewhere on the record, he explores, you know, the dichotomy that's inherent in his position as a celebrity, you know, just flossing and dealing in quote-unquote basic bitches on the track All Mine, you know, only to get personal again on the track Wouldn't Leave, which is, you know, a love letter to his wife, Kim Kardashian, who has stuck with and supported him through, you know, many a hard time and public spectacle. It's hard for me to knock Kanye here as far as lyrical content is concerned. But as usual, it's his delivery of it at times that I find, you know, just grating. I've always had this issue with his vocals, but it seems to have heightened over the years. It's hard to tell if that's just, you know, me and my taste changing, or if Kanye is just, like, you know, becoming more extreme in his delivery. I'm not really sure. But musically, you know, Kanye goes really deep for the samples that he uses on Ye, tapping the 1976 song Koth Biro by Black Savage on the track Yikes. He also taps Slick Rick's 1988 song Hey Young World on the track No Mistakes. And he also samples a track called Someday from 1967 by an artist named Shirley Ann Lee on the track Ghost Town. And this is just, you know, this is just a few of the samples. Now, Ye is, when it comes, you know, at the end of the day, this record is, like much of Kanye's work, you know, a deep pool of reference. And in this way, Kanye has consistently impressed me over the years. You know, I may never be sold fully on him as a lyricist, but the bottom line is that the man knows how to keep things on the production end, you know, endlessly interesting. Public spectacle be damned. So I gave the record Yay a rating of 7 out of 10. All right, so moving on to the next EP that I'd like to talk about today. It is the new EP from Jenny Haval, and the EP is called The Long Sleep. Alright, so that was a sample of a track called Spells. So, Norwegian singer, songwriter, and producer Jenny Haval returns with an EP called The Long Sleep, following up on her 2016 full-length record Blood Bitch, on which she balanced, you know, the avant-garde elements of her sound, you know, with a pop approach, delivering an album influenced by menstruation and vampire-related exploitation films from the 1970s. Now, Haval grounded the material by also including samples of bits of conversation regarding the album, which gives it an interesting feeling of breaking the fourth wall. So, you know, if Blood Bitch felt both cinematic and personal, this new EP, The Long Sleep, feels more detached in the sense that aesthetically it's very much like the descent into sleep and subsequent dreaming that a human being experiences. It's a much more fluid and layered approach in the sound, and that really, you know, produced a calming effect for me while listening to it. You know, and paired with lyrics like, you know, you will not be awake for long, it's not hard to get lost in the sort of half-awake haziness that Haval conjures on opening track Spells, which you heard a sample of. Now, the next track, which is called The Dreamer Is Everyone in Her Dream, you know, isolates Haval's tender vocals, accompanied by some meandering piano passages for the first half of the song, and followed by, you know, synths that really evoke, you know, the mystery and the, you know, the potential of the dream state. And then the 10-minute centerpiece of the EP, which is the title track, The Long Sleep, uses an extended opening with these apparition-like, you know, synth drones and some odd, like, difficult to identify found sound elements to convincingly, you know, portray a mind in the process of producing dreams, much in the same way that the specifics of one's dreams, you know, like places, people, words, you know, are often quick to change without explanation. Haval uses these whispered passages that are, you know, mostly indecipherable. And there's some odd, like, soft production and dashes of flute and Haval's subtle, shadowy vocals that all just make for a hypnotic suite that can be both whimsical and sinister depending on a listener's emotional state. And on the closing track, which is called I Want to Tell You Something, Haval breaks the fourth wall again, as she did on Blood Bitch. This time speaking directly to a listener, which is quite abrupt after the, you know, reverie of the title track. Haval questions the relationship between artist and listener and the value of context to that relationship. To be frank, I really think that her words are unnecessary here. The Long Sleep is a musical statement that will most likely be listened to and appreciated by the type of person who doesn't define their musical appetites, you know, to be in accordance with, you know, what's being promoted by a record label or mainstream media. You know, I liken my reaction to the sudden, you know, sudden oratory of this track, you know, to being woken up by the voice of a parent or a significant other or even a child, you know, being woken up out of a deep sleep. It's very difficult to process what another human being is saying after such a jarring transition from, you know, being asleep and dreaming to being awake. You know, perhaps that's what Haval intends here. If so, she succeeds. but all in all, Jenny Haval continues to impress and captivate and challenge me as a listener. And The Long Sleep is a quality entry in her eclectic and unique collection of sonic experiments. So I gave the EP The Long Sleep a rating of 7.5 out of 10. All right, so moving on to the last EP that I'd like to talk about today. It is a new EP from Black Thought and Ninth Wonder, and it is called Streams of Thought, Volume 1.
Yo, the big world keep turning like Ikes and animes. The church kitchen hustling dinners every Saturday. Pull over, let me grab a plate. I tend to gravitate towards our fish dinners from a styrofoam platter taste. My granddaddy sported plaid Donny Hathaway's. Hustling for everything we had till he passed away. When I would ask him about what path to take, he used to laugh and say, no man is an island, but I'm a castaway. Casualties, I seen them like the French Foreign Legion. On the streets, they used to carry out bizarre procedures and jeans.
All right, and that was a sample of the track 215. So, lyricist extraordinaire and veteran of the hugely influential band The Roots, Black Thought, teams up with the North Carolina producer, rapper, and DJ Ninth Wonder for Streams of Thought Volume 1, an EP that, you know, to be quite frank, accomplishes more in 5 tracks, you know, in 17 minutes than most of today's hip-hop artists could over the course of their career. You know, Black Thought just comes out of the gate swinging as always, spitting these characteristically rich and dense bars that, you know, actually require rewinds and unpacking of references, you know, like he's the, like the James Joyce of hip-hop or something. Nothing catches my attention more quickly and scratches a deeper itch, you know, as a fan of quality lyricists than Black Thought's type of, or Black Thought's level of proficiency. You know, I could spend an entire podcast episode dissecting one of Thought's verses on a track like 215, which you heard a sample of, but I think this chunk of lyrics right here displays his genius perfectly. So he raps, I heard murder ran as fast, as vast as deserted land, since back when Burning Man was blacks in Birmingham, before the presidential election diversion scam, matter of fact, before they clapped Franz Ferdinand. End of quote. Thought manages with ease to reference the popular Burning Man Festival, which happens in the deserts of Nevada each year, intimidation tactics used by the Ku Klux Klan, Birmingham, Alabama, as a center for the civil rights movement of the 1960s, the questionable validity of the 2016 presidential election, and the assassination of Archduke of Austria, Franz Ferdinand, in Sarajevo in June of 1918, which was the event that, you know, represents the catalyst of the First World War. It's just mind-boggling, and this is what Thought is doing and has been doing, you know, since the late 80s, you know, while a new generation of rappers can barely string words together. Listening to Thought really gives me hope for the genre, you know, as he raps about the industry being ready for a conquest on the track, Ninth versus Thought. North Carolina rapper, female rapper Rhapsody shows up for a feature on the track, Dostoevsky, holding her own against Thought and, you know, making the EP even stronger. And also Styles P also shows up, on a track called Making a Murderer. And the singer Kirby lends some soothing vocals on the closing track, which is called Thank You. And, you know, I've been talking about thought this whole time, but Ninth Wonder's production just really matches the lyrical content seamlessly. From the airy soulfulness of the track 215 to the claustrophobic tick of Making a Murderer. You know, it's easy to associate thought with the organic production of the Roots, but Ninth Wonder's production is definitely solid enough to stand up to work by, you know, that monumental outfit. And I'm really excited to see what happens and, you know, see what comes from subsequent volumes of Streams of Thought. I'm hoping that this isn't, you know, that volume one isn't it. I'm hoping that there's more. So I gave the EP Streams of Thought volume one a rating of 8 out of 10. So now we're going to be moving on to album reviews. And the first review is of the new Jonathan Davis album, which is called Black Labyrinth. There's something inside of me. This is my time again. This is the right time. Alright, so, you know, longtime Korn frontman Jonathan Davis delivers his long-awaited first solo album called Black Labyrinth. Now, as a teenage fan of Korn when they were fresh faces in the nu metal scene who made gritty, murky albums, you know, where Davis growled unintelligibly and recited nursery rhymes and cried occasionally, it's pretty odd to arrive here now, a quarter of a century later, at Davis's first individual, you know, statement in the form of a studio album, and an odd album at that. Now, during the, you know, middle years of the first decade of the new millennium, Davis worked on solo material while playing with a band called Jonathan Davis and the SFA. You know, but it wasn't until January of this year, 2018, that, you know, Black Labyrinth's first single, a track called What It Is, was released. Now, I hadn't been anticipating this release, in all honesty, but it sort of threw me for a loop regardless, and I just had to give this a listen. So, now, overall, Black Labyrinth contains quite the eclectic mix of, you know, new wave and goth elements, you know, with touches of bottom heavy hard rock, sprinkling of, you know, garagey punk, and a healthy, though sometimes disorienting, dose of, you know, Middle Eastern musical influence. You know, this strange brew, it becomes a bit easier to understand if one looks, you know, at the roster of musicians who make guest appearances on the record. You know, it includes Wes Borland of Limp Bizkit and Black Light Burns. It also features the jazz upright bassist by the name of Miles Mosley. It also features an Indian violinist known as Shankar, who was famous for working with Peter Gabriel. And the record also features a guy by the name of Jivan Gasparian, who's an Armenian musician, who's known as the master of the duduk, I think it's pronounced, D-U-D-U-K, duduk, which is a wind instrument. And Davis also taps current Korn drummer Ray Luzier, famous percussionist by the name of Mike Dillon, and keyboardist Zach Baird, who has worked with Korn often in the past. And Davis himself plays keys, guitars, sitar, and violin on the record. So, as a result of this melting pot, Black Labyrinth is an album that, while very ambitious, it gets away from Davis for a significant chunk of its runtime. Things start off well enough with the track Underneath My Skin, which you heard a sample of, which very helpfully bridges, you know, the gap between the heaviness of Korn and a more sort of post-punk aesthetic. The following track, which is called Final Days, establishes the album's Middle Eastern leanings, you know, effectively. And the then the chunky guitar riffs and sci-fi keys of the track Everyone, you know, provide a good counterpoint to the new directions, you know, that Davis has sort of strolled down on the first two tracks of this album. Now here's where Davis runs into trouble. This track called Happiness, you know, finds Davis just doing a tired imitation of his, you know, Life is Peachy Corn days. And this doesn't mix well, you know, with the feeling of this record so far. The track Your God, while having a very memorable chorus, you know, is also a mess. A track called The Walk On, you know, sounds like a track that Korn left off their See You on the Other Side album. And then this other track called The Secret, you know, sounds almost like power pop, but it avoids this classification due to, you know, Davis's very melodramatic vocals on the song's verses. And then things take a turn for the better on the long playing track Basic Needs, which melds a beautiful electronic backdrop and some very powerful guitar driven choruses with a much subtler vocal performance from Davis, along with an instrumental break in the middle that, you know, that proves that when carefully integrated, the seemingly, you know, disparate musical motifs on Black Labyrinth can actually coexist beautifully. And the rest of the record is a mixed bag, you know, with interesting tracks like Medicate standing just head and shoulders above the really goofy bounce of this overwrought track called What You Believe, and just the confounding weirdness of this track called Gender. And Davis wraps up the affair with the straightforward, you know, if pessimistic, heavy alternative rock of the track What It Is, you know, providing an adequate bookend to the album's opener, but causing me to wonder what possessed Davis to include some of the material that he did on this record. You know, at 50 minutes, this record could easily lose 4 or 5 tracks and, you know, sound like a much more cohesive statement. In the end, you know, Black Labyrinth sounds like an artist pulling material from various stages in their development as a solo entity, you know, which does make sense given the length of time that Davis has been working on material outside of his work in Korn. The problem is that lyrically as well, much of the material on Black Labyrinth could have come from a Korn record. Musically, Davis tries admirably to play chameleon, and even if the record misses much of the time, he deserves props for taking himself in, you know, unexpected directions. You know, maybe a shorter length of time between this record and another one could, you know, prove more practical for him in order to write and produce, you know, a concise album. So I gave the record Black Labyrinth a rating of 6 out of 10. All right, so moving on to the next album I'd like to talk about today. It is the new record from the band Graveyard. The record is called Peace. And that was a sample of the track Please Don't. So Swedish retro rockers Graveyard return with Peace, their 5th studio album, and the follow-up to 2015's record Innocence and Decadence. Now, as usual, I have mixed feelings about this record, and I think I can trace this conflict, you know, to my sort of general preference for musical evolution on the part of the bands that I listen to. I can't honestly say that I think Graveyard have ever made a bad record. Typically, I greatly enjoy at least half of the material on their releases. What bothers me is that the band don't seem to progress very much. Now, what this leads to is generally positive reactions on my part to the band's, you know, driving, bluesy songs, like on this record, tracks like Peace and also a track called Cold Love. You know, much as I enjoy tracks like the title track from their album High Singin' Blues or the track An Industry of Murder from their album Lights Out, the gripe that I continually have with Graveyard lies in the band's slower songs, represented on this new record by tracks such as See the Day and Del Manic. These tunes always seem to lack conviction or any sort of strong emotional weight. So instead of acting, you know, as valleys leading to spectacular peaks, like on, you know, great albums, these tracks often lead to, you know, apathy and distraction on my part as a listener. You know, when a band is writing albums that clock in at a little over 40 minutes on average, you know, there's not a lot of time to waste. You know, the production on Peace is a lot more muscular, I think, than the last time around, you know, on Innocence and Decadence, which I believe definitely plays to the band's strengths. Vocalist Joachim Nilsson, you know, has an amazing range, you know, from a deep, throaty, smoky throat rumble to, you know, an Axl Rose screech and, you know, all points in between. And the band also seem characteristically focused on songcraft and avoiding, you know, guitar heroics and, you know, other hard rock or metal cliches and pitfalls. Now, if the band can find a way to, you know, write powerhouse ballads that really pack the sort of wallop that the rest of their songs do, you know, Graveyard will just knock it out of the park. I'm optimistic that they can do it, because their past material, you know, always speaks to their talent. I gave the record Peace a rating of 7 out of 10. Alright, so moving on to the next record I'd like to talk about today. It is the new record from the Scottish band Churches. That's C-H-V-R-C-H-E-S, Churches, or as I like to call them, Chverches. And the record is called Love Is Dead. And that was a sample of a song called Never Say Die. All right, so Scottish synth pop trio Churches return with Love Is Dead, which is their third studio record and the follow-up to 2015's record Every Open Eye. Love Is Dead marks the first time the trio have worked with an outside producer, and they tapped a guy named Greg Kirsten, who's a Grammy-winning producer, who's worked with the likes of Foo Fighters, Beck, Adele, Pink, and even Sia. The end result is a shiny, somewhat one-note record on the production side of things. Now, you know, what always struck me about Churches in the past was their knack for sounding both commercially accessible and poppy while managing somehow to still cultivate their own sound, which is one of contrasts. You know, the music is always very catchy, but it really can throw you off track, and Lauren Mayberry's vocals have always walked a fine line, you know, between just sugary pop and, you know, the fierceness of alternative rock front women like Like a good modern example would be Marissa Paternoster from the rock band Screaming Females. Now, as I mentioned already, the producer of this record, Greg Kirsten, has writing and production credits on all but three of this album's tracks, and unfortunately, the album as a whole suffers as a result of this. You know, some of the unique energy that made the record's Every Open Eye, you know, and the band's debut record, The Bones of What You Believe, special, it just feels muted or spit-shined, you know, to the point of sounding saccharine. Tracks like the first single, Get Out, and also the opening track on the record, which is called Graffiti, you know, are catchy and heartfelt enough, largely as a result of Mayberry's vocal performances. But as the album progresses, the cookie-cutter song structures and the glossy production, you know, become difficult for me to swallow. And appropriately enough, it's the three tracks that the band produced themselves without Kirsten that stand out and really intrigue me. The first is a cut called My Enemy, a hypnotic gem that pits Matt Berninger of The National against Mayberry, and the results are pretty captivated. The results are pretty captivating. But then after, you know, another stretch of Kirsten-produced glittery pop tunes, the best of which is the defiant track Never Say Die, a listener arrives at this track called God's Plan. Now, this is the second track that was produced by the band themselves, and it sounds nothing like any of the other songs on this record. Church's member Martin Doherty takes the lead on vocals here, and the, you know, oscillating synths and this sort of stutter step rhythm of this track, it really takes the album somewhere else altogether. And it makes me wonder why the hell a group as adept at walking a tightrope between accessibility and originality like Church is, why they chose to let Kirsten's production style dominate this album, especially after the success of their last album, Every Open Eye. Now, the last of, you know, these three self-produced songs, a track called Really Gone, immediately follows God's Plan. And while it's closer in style to the Kirsten-produced material, it sounds way more understated than any of those tracks. And Mayberry just really shines on this track, perhaps more brightly than anywhere else on the entire record. And then a short, somewhat odd, piano-based instrumental interlude follows, which is called Two. And it works as a setup for the closing track, which is called Wonderland, you know, which thankfully feels like a well-constructed bridge between, you know, the band themselves and Kirsten. You know, fluctuating between both production styles pretty nimbly and bringing the album to a close with a very resolute Mayberry, you know, making the decision in the lyrics to, you know, stop living in an idealized, you know, sort of fantasy of hope. Now, in this listener's humble opinion, churches need to trust in their own abilities and just self-produce the next time around. You know, get Martin Doherty on vocals more often as a sort of counterpoint to Mayberry. And most importantly, just let the songs take them where they will. It's obvious that they can do it. The creativity and the ability is there in spades. So don't let a producer get in the way. So I gave the record Love is Dead a rating of 7 out of 10. All right, so moving on to the next record I would like to talk about today. It is the new record from Father John Misty, and it is called God's Favorite Customer.
I'm feeling good, damn, I'm feeling so fine. I'm living on a cloud above an island in my mind. Oh, baby, don't be alarmed, this is just my vibe. No need to walk around, no, it's not too bad a climb. Mr. T,
Tillman for the seventh time. We have no knowledge of a film that is being shot outside those.
And that was a sample of the track Mr. Tillman. So, Josh Tillman, also known as Father John Misty, returns with God's Favorite Customer, his fourth studio album under this moniker, Father John Misty, and the follow-up to last year's acclaimed album, Pure Comedy, which was a nearly 80-minute opus that sort of took on mankind and society's ills in just an exploding, you know, information age. Now, I was very surprised at hearing that Tillman would be releasing another record so close on the heels of Pure Comedy. And in all honesty, I was concerned. You know, this sort of frequency of output tends to produce, you know, results of mixed quality, with the artist, you know, oftentimes creating deeply personal works that, you know, that end up polarizing opinion. But somehow Josh Tillman has avoided these traps and he's created another very good record. Now, the biggest difference for me between Pure Comedy and God's Favorite Customer, you know, is, you know, a less dramatic presentation in this new record. Whereas many of Pure Comedy's tunes were, you know, just an orchestra away from being, you know, fit for a musical, Tillman has narrowed the lens both topically and in his presentation on God's Favorite Customer. Written mostly during a 6-week period in which Tillman lived in a hotel after just a major shakeup in his personal life, the majority of songs on this record feel, you know, less sardonic in their attitudes and more just straight up self-critical. The opening track, which is called Hang Out at the Gallows, just sounds like the dreadful morning of one's execution, with plenty of imagery, you know, like sharp knives and sinking ships to enhance the picture. You can almost feel the, like, slightly tongue-in-cheek self-deprecation and escapism, you know, coming in this track, you know, before the album's first single, Mr. Tillman, which you heard a sample of, you know, begins. This track very cleverly paints a picture of Tillman during his hotel stay, mostly from the viewpoint of the hotel's reception staff, you know, who are forced to deal with a client who, you know, disturbs other clientele, drags his mattress onto the patio to go to sleep, and also causes great concern among the staff with his very heavy drinking and, you know, the antics that are a result of that drinking. Unfortunately, Tillman's trademark, you know, blue and black humor take a back seat after this track, you know, and he sort of bounces through a track like Date Night, which is much more in favor of just inward criticism concerning failed love, which is also explored in another track called Just Dumb Enough to Try. And also, the fear of suicide that, you know, loved ones and acquaintances can feel for someone who's on the rocks, on a track called Please Don't Die. You know, when suddenly Tillman injects humor into the mix again on the otherwise desperately lonely track The Palace, you know, and he sings, "Last night I wrote a poem. Man, I must have been in the poem zone." The effect is sort of abrupt and sort of jarring. You know, all in all, God's Favorite Customer comes across as an honest, unfiltered picture of an artist in the midst of, you know, a life crisis, close to rock bottom, and the chaotic nature of that person's life as they, you know, work through their tribulations. The quote-unquote sad clown that commented on civilization's ills on Pure Comedy, you know, has, like, taken off most of the makeup and costume as the circus prepares to leave town. Now, it's a testament to Tillman's talent that he could produce such a strong, musical and lyrical statement, you know, so close behind pure comedy, especially considering that he wrote the material during those, you know, six very difficult weeks he spent in that hotel. You know, on the closing track of God's Favorite Customer, a track called We're Only People, Tillman turns the lens somewhat outward again, you know, perhaps resolving to step back into his familiar living situation and, you know, realize that his heartache and his struggle is universal, and therefore, you know, his healing must also include the company and the support of others. Somewhat frustrating record, but after, you know, after more than a few listens, ultimately a rewarding record and, you know, worthy of standing next to something like Pure Comedy. So I gave God's Favorite Customer a rating of 8 out of 10. Okay, so moving on to the last record that I would like to talk about today and my personal pick for this episode. It is the new record from the Swedish pop metal band, I guess we'll call them, Ghost. The record is called Prequel. That was a sample of the track Rats. So Swedish pop metal band Ghost returns with Prequel. Therefore, Prequel. That's just how it seems to be spelled slightly different than Prequel. So I feel like it needs to be said Prequel. It's Ghost's fourth studio record and the follow-up to 2015's record Meliora. Now Ghost's first three records, you know, presented a loose linear concept, you know, within the lyrics, dealing with themes such as the absence of God and the relationship between, you know, mankind's inherent savagery and iniquity and Christian symbols such as the Antichrist. So, Prequel takes the action back to Europe in the 1300s, during the time of the Black Death. Now, the Black Death, which is a plague that, you know, claimed the lives of an estimated 30 to 60% of Europe's population at the time, just caused upheaval in all facets of society, not least of all the religious. And as, you know, a result of religious fervor and zealotry, many marginalized groups such as the infirm, you know, i.e., you know, people with leprosy, Jews, foreigners, and the poor were targeted oftentimes for extermination, in some cases in an attempt by, you know, these religious zealots to win the forgiveness of their God, you know. And it's against this chaotic backdrop, you know, which does parallel our current society in disturbing fashion, that Ghost introduce vocalist Tobias Forge's fourth persona. The first three albums all saw an incarnation of the quote-unquote anti-Pope character, Papa Emeritus. And now he has a new incarnation, Cardinal Copia. So in this way, the band established a sort of, like, a sense of history as cautionary tale before even playing a note. Now, Prequel opens with a track called Ashes, an introduction that features Forge's daughter singing a haunting traditional version of Ring Around the Rosie, you know, which of course originated during the time of the Black Death. The band come in, you know, with a crash, and as the guitars and the synths, you know, set the eerie stage for what's to come, you know, it really welcomes fans familiar with Ghost's work back into their, you know, unique world. This track is an effective and clever representation of this band's MO. You know, blending the tender and the harsh, you know, and the light and the heavy. Thunderous drums signal the opening of the album's first single, Rats, which you heard a sample of, and which, you know, perhaps more than any other track on Prequel, melds all of Ghost's musical facets into one tidy package. In this sense, it operates much like the band's single Square Hammer did. That was a track that was on the Pope Star EP, which was released, I think, in 2016, I'm pretty sure. But yeah, it operates much like Square Hammer did. You know, crunchy rhythm guitars and melodic leads and solos that never rely on flash. Synths that at times elevate the tunes to the level of, you know, satanic hymns, if you will. And forges unsettlingly sweet and inviting vocals. You know, on Rats, Forge sings of the spread of the plague during the Black Death, which was often attributed to black rats, and the murderous panic that followed. And, it, you know, it's downright disturbing to realize how many similarities exist between the mid-1300s and our world in 2018. Balanced against, you know, this use of allegory is an insanely infectious pop metal presentation, and the results are just impossible to ignore or forget about once they've put their hooks, you know, in your brain. And from there, the band launched into a track called Faith, which is equal parts theatrical rock and driving metal. And they continue that attack through the next track, which is called See the Light. And when the band, you know, then the band reached this track called Miasma, and they take a very interesting turn into prog territory. You know, this side of the band has peeked its head out occasionally on their previous records, but here it's given the full treatment, you know. The guitars sharing the space so well with the synths and a saxophone. Yes, that's right, I said a saxophone. You know, in the song, it feels like some sort of, like, prog jazz fusion experiment, but one that Ghost keep fully within the parameters of their musical aesthetic. And Miasma, you know, being a natural midway point for the record, you know, the back half of Prequel then kicks off with just the damn near disco track, Danse Macabre, which means macabre dance. Now, this song seems to have divided some of Ghost's fan base, you know, with some claiming that the band take a step, you know, one step, they're going one step too far into accessibility. And I've read a few comments online referring to the track as, you know, quote unquote, bad imitation. You know, is Danse Macabre a great song? I don't think so. But if somebody feels blindsided by it, then they haven't really been paying attention. You know, if Ghost stand at a crossroads between metal and pop, you know, then it stands to reason that disco is a genre that is fair game for the group to explore if they feel inclined to. You know, I personally embrace the variety that this track brings to the record, you know, given, especially given the record's less than pleasant subject matter. This would certainly never be a go-to Ghost song for me, but I wouldn't skip it either. The following track, which is called Pro Memoria, builds very dramatically upon a string-based opening and a piano that's like shrouded in mystery before opening up into an arena-ready ballad similar to the song He Is from their last album, Meliora. It's really startling to hear the difference between tunes like this and other ballads that the band have included on their previous records, such as the track Goulet / Zombie Queen from their second album, Infestissumam. You know, there's a confidence that shines through more and more with each Ghost release, and an ability to balance experimentation with a refining of their core sound that, you know, really few other bands can match. Now, the track Witch Image, much like Danse Macabre before it, pays homage to the, you know, music of yesteryear, in this case, you know, 80s pop rock, I would say. The juxtaposition of this musical backdrop with lyrics like, "As you sleep in earthly delight, someone's flesh is rotting tonight," reminds me of what drew me to Ghost in the first place. When I heard Forge singing of the quote-unquote smell of dead human sacrifice on the track Ritual from their debut record, Opus Eponymous. You know, Ghost is very much about startling contrasts. And while these contrasts seemed incredibly odd at first to me, they have become for me the band's most enduring qualities. Now, Ghost take one more trip into unusual terrain with the instrumental track, and I'm going to try to pronounce this correctly. I think it's Helvis Fönster. Anyone who speaks Swedish, don't kill me. And this is a composition that, you know, seems as informed by, I'm guessing, traditional Swedish music as it is by prog rock. You know, on a record that has already pushed the boundaries of what many likely believed Ghost to be capable of, you know, this beautiful track just widens the scope even more, teasing listeners like myself and making me very curious about what paths the band will travel down next. And the closing track, which is called Life Eternal, brings the album to its logical conclusion, and the song's spiritual imagery, which Forge chooses to depict ambiguously, unlike a track like Pro Memoria, where he, you know, mentions Lucifer by name. And on Life Eternal, you know, the lyrics just intertwine, you know, these spiritual themes with the idea of intimate human contact. And that really sums up, you know, a main theme of Ghost's work so far, the interconnection between human beings and, you know, the mythologies that they create. As the band have stated before, you know, they are not concerned so much with Lucifer or Satan, so much as mankind. You know, Prequel is another very exciting and rewarding chapter in Ghost's catalog, and it should please old and new fans alike. So I gave the record Prequel a rating of 8 out of 10. All right, so that wraps up the reviews for today. Make sure anybody who's listening to this podcast, please get on Facebook and look up the Radio Live Transmission Facebook group and join up with us, because we can always use new members and more perspectives. All right, so please do that. Also, make sure to check up with me on the next episode, episode 34, on which I will be reviewing new releases from Zeal and Ardor, Johnny Marr, J-Rock, and also Yab. All right, so once again, thank you guys for listening. This is Ryan, your host for the Radio Live Transmission Podcast, signing off. Have a great night.